And then he said that you're all a bunch of assholes, and that it was really ridiculous that the gold was in that special place, which nobody ended up finding. And then, you know, after that tour in America, where we desperately tried to find the lost manuscript of all the kind of super, you know, songs I'd written that I thought would be number one hits for everybody from Taylor Swift due to Ricky Martin, it was just a waste of time. So I quit.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 145 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And I was thinking earlier... Right.
Don't think.
Escape artists never die. Tales.
That's not true, is it? Some of them do.
Tell themselves.
Well, so yeah, that's impossible. They're an idea. Yep.
It's quite a good thing we have this podcast.
Yeah. This week's guest is a singer and funeral for a friend, frontman, an all-round legend, Matthew Davis Cray.
Yes, and seriously, since day one, we have been bombarded with requests for this episode.
Leave us alone. Leave us alone now. We've got him, haven't we? We fucking got him.
We're ecstatic that it's finally happened, and we appreciate Matt for taking the time, because he doesn't do anything like this, especially over the last few years. So it's a great conversation, and we're going to get into so much, because as you all probably know by now, Funeral for a Friend is a band that means so much to the both of us personally. The impact on the music scene today is undeniable, and there seems to be a huge magical resurgence of the band reuniting in 2019 for a series of special benefit shows in honor of Stu Brothers that both of us were lucky enough to attend. And since then, fans have taken it on as a celebration. And for me, there seems to be an even extra amount of emotional excitement anytime they announce a show. And they're going to be back this weekend performing twice at Slam Dunk Festival North and South. I'm sure both of us will end up in the pit.
Yes, hopefully. I am absolutely worried about the COVID, but apart from that, yeah, as long as I test positive tomorrow and Friday,
negative.
The other one. See, that's how scared I am. I'm already saying positive. Yes, as long as I test negative, we are good to go, and I cannot wait to see them again. Like I mentioned during the interview you're about to listen to in October, those 3 days with Funeral for a Friend were the best 3 days of that year for me. So what an honour to have Matthew on. I was lucky enough to go to, I missed Faf's first show, but then I think I went to the next 5 shows because I knew from from the moment I heard the demo that they were going to be fucking huge and they were going to be inspirational. And so, yeah, I went to see them loads and loads of times until they gave up and became my friend. So that's a story for everyone. If you like a band, if you just bug them enough, you can eventually become their friends, and they might give you some shows, and you might end up being a band yourself. So yeah, do that. That's my idea.
Well, to be fair, it could go either two ways. It goes like that, where you become friends and play shows and all, or you get a restraining order. And the fact, Sean, you've made a lot of friends by bugging them and doing tours and whatnot and haven't had a single restraining order against you, that's an achievement in itself. I've just realised that, well, so well done.
Yeah, we also haven't mentioned restraining orders before on the podcast, have we? Really, there could be some. Hey, get in touch with us at Happening Pod on Twitter and Instagram to let us know who you think might have a restraining order against either me or Morgan.
Ooh.
One of them's got more than the other. Morgan, probably.
Yeah, most probably. But what a conversation that this is. And with Matt, we're going to get into absolutely everything from his life now in Germany and working for Avocado Booking to the end of Funeral for a Friend in 2016 to their return. What the future might hold for the band. Their legacy, some of our favorite tracks and albums, and a few surprises along the way. So it's definitely one to check out if you're a diehard fan of Funeral for a Friend or just love band stories. Let me tell you that.
If you are listening to this over the weekend, you might hear an exclusive that I don't think is anywhere else. So yes, if you do hear it, please share it. Please tell everyone far and wide. We absolutely love doing this. If you enjoyed this one, check out the one we did with Chris Coombs Roberts. That we did previously, that was back in October 2019 when we did those shows. That was also good. I just realised that everybody in Film for a Friend is slowly getting the double barrel surname.
Yeah.
Ryan Richards.
Darren Smith.
Darren Smith.
Okay.
It's definitely every single one of them has got. Don't look into it. Don't look into it at all. But they've all got double barrel surnames now, which is strange.
If you look into it, I think you're basically saying we're liars, and I don't think that's very nice at all. So just believe everything we say on this podcast, please. But no, we'd have a previous episode of Chris, and we have a previous episode of Ryan for you to check out as well. And we will be at Slam Dunk Festival this weekend, covering and getting some lovely content for you for the podcast coming up. So if you want to keep up to date with everything going on in the world of Sapnin, go and give us a follow at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Or you could get all the exclusive news first before anyone else, with a bunch of bonuses, and be involved with our wonderful community of people who are the best we can ever imagine as our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sapnin.
Yes, what a fantastic community we've accidentally created there of absolute legends as well. So, patreon.com/Sapnin to support the show and keep us going. We appreciate every single person involved, whoever has been involved and is thinking of getting involved. But hurry up and do it, innit? Shall we get on with this episode?
Yes, so this is the wonderful Matthew, A Funeral for a Friend, right here on episode 145 of Sapnin Podcast.
145 episodes of this. Mad, isn't it? Absolutely mad. We put 5 episodes out last month, and it's only 4 weeks. Sapnin! Check out the other episodes, all you shit.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's happening!
It's happening!
It's happening!
Yes, our guest this week is singer, songwriter, and Disney superstar Mickey Mouse. What was that then? Oh, what a start. What the fuck is that? Yeah, this week's guest is Film for a Friend frontman and all-round legend, Matthew Davis Cray. How are you, Matthew?
Much better now that I've loosened my voice up with that.
Little warm-up routine. No, but I appreciate you taking the time, man. How's things at the moment? You've just arrived in Wales, I believe.
Yeah, for the first time in just under 2 years, I have arrived back in the land of my fathers, my mothers, my aunties, my uncles, and my cousins. And yeah, I've been here since Friday, so it's been good. I'm still kind of locked down because I'm waiting for my day two test results to come back. But apart from that, pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? It's like, yeah, so yeah, we should explain. For those of you who don't know, Matthew now lives in Germany and is back because this weekend he is playing the mighty Slam Dunk Festival with Funeral for a Friend. Yeah, how's Germany?
Germany is doing pretty well, in all fairness. I mean, I live in a real rural part up in the northwest. I'm not a big fan of big city life, so I'm quite glad that we managed to settle somewhere where there's lots of open spaces. I mean, with the animals that we've got and the dogs and everything, it's kind of held us in good stead during this the last 2 years. So.
Nice, yeah. Well, how long have you actually been out there? Because I believe it's before Funeral originally called it a day back in 2016, right? Or was it just
No, 2017. The start of 2017 is when we moved, my wife and I. I mean, my wife's German, but we were living in the valleys for quite a long time. And I think as the band kind of wound down, we just decided that we'd try life over the other side of the channel. And yeah, we've been there since 2017, and I'm now a full-fledged German as well as a Welshman. Ooh. So
that's as good.
So I'm still a European Union citizen, so
you jammy bastard.
Yeah, I get the benefit of of both worlds. So,
My man.
It was a lot of work. I mean, I resent having to do it. I mean, no, I kind of don't. I mean, it makes sense if you're living in a country to kind of get to grips and learn the language and everything. And but generally, it kind of breaks my heart a little bit thinking that I kind of maybe didn't have to do it, you know, to require for me to stay a European Union citizen. But it's good. It's good for me. It's good for my family. So.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, how is your German? Are you are you good to go now?
Total Scheiße. Oh. my German is probably no better than a 2-year-old German child. To be honest with you. All right. No, I mean I get by. I kind of really put the pedal to the metal to get the requirements so I could apply for citizenship before the UK properly. Left the European Union, so that took, and in the middle of COVID as well, that took a hell of a lot longer than what was scheduled, but yeah, I mean, there was some stress, but I'm very, very glad that I was able to kind of do as much as I needed to satisfy the German government that I was okay to stay when they get through.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've never done a citizenship test again. I couldn't even prove I was Welsh, I guess.
I was going to say, could you answer Welsh questions, though, Sean, if you had to? Like, I don't...
No, God, no.
I mean, the basic requirements involve me having to be proficient in a B1 level German at the very basic element, and I had to take a citizenship test, which was 33 questions about a whole host of things to do with German's history, political system, cultural stuff, and stuff that even when I was talking to Germans, my German friends would be like, I have no idea what that is. So it's like, I had to deep dive into a lot of things, and which was interesting. And it was cool.
So nice. so we shouldn't expect you to re-record all the funeral songs in German.
I'm not going to do. But honestly, back in the 80s and the 70s, it was a big deal for artists to do that. Peter Gabriel released every one of his first kind of like five solo albums as German versions as well, which is like pretty rad. If you think about it, I mean, the market, Germany's always had a strong kind of rock and alternative kind of market. So, but it's very unique. So,
is it not a way now where we can get Matthew Davis Cray and David Hasselhoff together? Because there's also a Welsh connection there now, because David married a woman from Glyneath, like you do when you're David Hasselhoff.
But he's technically American, isn't he?
Yeah, but the Germans
love him.
Yeah,
I mean the Germans love him. I mean, he's practically like they got statues of him everywhere where I go. It's literally every household has to have a little David Hasselhoff statue on the mantelpiece there.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, for the German test, I was wondering if you had to like sing any of his songs.
How many number one hits did David Hasselhoff? I didn't want you. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he's part of the curriculum over there.
Learn it in school. Yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine all the funeral songs now in German. That would be...
Or in the style of David Hasselhoff.
In the style of David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
We need to bring those two worlds together, I think. David Hasselhoff. Die Hasselhoff, because he's part of Welsh now.
Yeah, Die Hasselhoff.
Hasselhoff and Matt together doing German Funeral for a Friend covers. Yeah, what's... Yeah, nothing more than a line in your book in German, then.
Oh.
Need to work these out. This is the future.
I'm sure there's someone in Germany listening to this, so if you can tweet us the translation to some of the lyrics in German, that'd be great, get the ball rolling.
It probably is a couple of sentences or a paragraph longer than that.
Yeah.
It
definitely doesn't fit the melody. It definitely doesn't fit the melody anymore. No, trying to get all the words unlikely. In.
But nice to see everything's going well in Germany, man. And really, there's a lot we want to get into, because especially just these last 5 years in particular must have been such a roller coaster of emotions for you in many different ways, from funeral originally ending to coming back. You moved to Germany, you're working with Arthur Carvel booking. I mean, when you sit down now and think about just those last few years in particular, is it quite weird to see how much life has changed so often?
I've never really looked at it in that way, really, because everything has been such a fluid move from funeral stopping to, I mean, a lot of things in the last couple of years of funeral's existence kind of were moving in a way which were less reliant on the band being at the forefront of what I think we did. You know, I started working in a record shop part-time during the last couple of years of funeral, and just for me, my life was just kind of fluidly moving from it being a major point in my life to becoming something that was going to end and moving into more of more normality. I mean, more of a structured kind of existence where I could actually block out parts of my calendar without having to worry about it moving consistently. But the last couple of years have just been incredibly fluid. I mean, they've flown by like that. I mean, to be fair with you, I mean, I don't know if it's getting older is a aspect of that, but I have not really spent too much time dwelling on it. You know, going from band life to moving abroad, to settling, you know, and starting a life there, working for my wife's company and everything. And I mean, I'm still glad to be involved in the music industry, but it's on a level which I feel a lot more comfortable being a part of things. And it's not the center of my existence, but it's nice to be able to participate in it. And getting to come back and do, obviously, I don't think we would have done anything if it wasn't for the benefit shows we did in 2019. And the response to those were so overwhelming.
Magical, Sean,
you were there. I mean, it was, I don't think any of us expected the reaction or the personal reaction to us being around each other as strongly as we did. And I'm not saying, I mean, I don't think we ever said that, I mean, oh, let's just get, you know, let's keep the dream alive, because the dream, I mean, we've lived through the dream. We come out the other end of the dream, and it was a nice attempt to kind of reconcile the kind of lineup aspect of the band. Again, we're bringing Darren back and Ryan back, and having the band be almost the sum total of the history, if you know, for a friend, as much as we could on stage at this point, and having that experience, which was, I would be lying if I said it wasn't a lot of fun. It was a great laugh. And I mean, this would have happened, the shows that we've got planned would have happened a lot sooner if it wasn't for the pandemic. But as far as that, I mean, I don't think there's anything further than that. So we'll see where it goes, if it goes anywhere.
Well, touching on those October shows in 2019, it's mad. 2019, it's nearly 2 years ago. That's nuts. And they were literally the three best days of 2019. And this is pre-pandemic, where before we were all just trapped in our houses being miserable. So they were the three best days of 2019 for me. I think they were amazing from the moment I turned up, because I wasn't sure, to be honest. Like, you guys asked the Blackout to support, and we couldn't organize it, so you guys offered Raiders, and that meant the world to us, and especially for us to show that Stu Brothers meant a lot to us as well. But I turned up, and I genuinely wasn't sure how everybody was going to react to each other. And I just didn't know how there was part of me that I was expecting it to be a little bit awkward even. But I turned up and I came early, and you guys were all on stage and you were all fucking beaming. And I was like, oh, this looks good. And it was literally the three best days of 2019. The two best shows Raiders have played so far. And yeah, just getting to be there was an absolute honour. And yeah, what a magical, magical 3 days they were. And after that, I thought, well, they've got to do more shows, just because the love you all seem to have for each other on stage, but the love from the crowd was, I expected it from the crowd, but I didn't expect that much as well. It was just absolutely fucking magical.
Well, thank you for the kind words, you soppy bastard. Absolutely. I mean, 100%. I think none of us, I certainly didn't anticipate the just how easy it would be to slip back into the comfortable kind of environment of being around each other. I mean, and in all fairness, it kind of informed me just how much I missed certain personalities in the band. I mean, I didn't realize I'd missed Darren so much, being around Darren.
Do you know what? Snap. I was the same. As soon as I saw him, I was like, hey, it's Darren. Because Darren still, you know, he still lives not far from me. It's just, we haven't been in the right circles and stuff, and we haven't been playing the same thing. Yeah. But yeah, I've DJed with him a few times since, and he's literally one of the funniest, driest people I've ever met in my life.
I mean, there were so many years that we carried on with a particular lineup of the band, and it wasn't until we kind of stepped foot in the rehearsal space that it just felt like, you know what, I've missed this. I've missed. And the reason was, there was no absolutely zero expectations going into the benefit shows, other than making sure that we weren't absolutely shit. And it was just like, it was just like putting on your favorite pair of slippers. You know, I mean, I was really nervous because up until that point, I'd kind of stopped doing anything music related creatively. I hadn't sung in any kind of fashion, not even in the shower to myself. you know what? I honestly don't know what it was. I think, and I put it down to the fact that it was such a major part of my life for so long that it kind of, towards the end, it kind of stopped being, I was kind of relieved that I could just not, it was not on me to do it. It almost took the fun out of it for me. So I kind of shut down and didn't do anything. So having to kind of step up and relearn how to do that again was incredibly daunting. And I think it would have been even more daunting if I'd have stepped foot into rehearsals and it would have been awkward or there would have been some weirdness there. But everybody was super chill. I mean, like, and it was as if we hadn't, you know, that lineup of all six of us in that room had always been there. And personalities, no egos, no nothing. Any issues that we might have had with anything over the years just kind of didn't exist. And we just kind of picked up where things left off. And yes, I mean, it just felt really natural. And I think when the idea of, I think because Ryan mentioned to me that Download had been interested in kind of having us play a show, and I was kind of one, I mean, because those three shows were so magical, I was kind of wondering if it would just kind of be counterproductive to that feeling to kind of push it any further. But the response was so insane, and the amount of people that couldn't, either I was contacted by that couldn't get to be a part of those shows. When we were discussing the possibility of doing a few more for the benefit of those who couldn't get to see the benefit shows, then I think having that feeling, that vibe amongst us really helped in convincing me that it was, you know, a cool thing to kind of do. And even if it's the last thing we ever do now, I mean, it'll be at least we've kind of got to do something together in that regard, and have it be hopefully, you know, a bit of fun.
One thing I did want to talk to you about is that kind of your process mentally getting back into Funeral for a Friend, because obviously you kind of dealt with a lot of things and put it to bed originally back in 2016 when you had those farewell shows. And was there ever a point of view that thought maybe it would be too hard to do again? Or was it because everything was kind of forced to and the benefit that it made it much more easier?
Yeah, I mean, this the benefit for Stu, I mean, Stu literally is the reason why I kind of agreed to do it. I mean, any other circumstance at that point, I probably would have just gone, nope, not ready, not keen on revisiting old things. And it's horrible that it takes an event like that, somebody that you was always around the existence of the band in the early, pretty much predominantly the first, you know, 5 or 6 years of the band, who spent his time doing things for us that still blows my mind. But I mean, if there was anybody that would have, you know, convinced me to do it, then it would have been Stu, really. And it's heartbreaking and tragic that it was that, you know, that particular circumstance. But I feel grateful that we had the opportunity to celebrate his contribution to not just to us, for the funeral family, so to speak, but for his own family to see how absolutely loved and respected he was amongst our community. I mean, the people that were around us at the very early days of the band were very much a support group for each other, and are still very, very much there for each other now, which still blows my mind that our band, you know, could have created or influenced something like that. You know, you know, I've kind of learned to try to not take those things for granted. It's very special and unique. But I was absolutely terrified going into it because having literally pressed stop on anything music related up to that point, it was very scary trying to put that hat back on again, you know, and just put yourself in the mindset of the person that I was in the band, because I was very good at being one person on stage and myself off stage, which is very shy, very introverted, mm-hmm. very personal, very private. And then finding, you know, the energy to be in front of people. I mean, I still don't know how I manage it, to be honest, because it goes against everything in my body to put myself through that. I mean, it's the time away from the band gave me a lot of time to reflect on that part of myself. And I was generally when I got, you know, when we started talking about it, playing these benefit shows, I got the sweat. I was sweating. I was just like, I said to my wife, I said, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be that person again. I don't know if I can be in front of people. I don't know if I can sing these songs in the same way. I literally locked myself. I was lucky because we were staying at that point. We were still staying. I was staying with my in-laws, and they've got a basement. So I was locking myself in the basement my microphone was still packed in boxes in a storage space after we moved. I don't know about you, Sean, but over the years, I don't know, I've had a weird psycho kind of connection that I can't sing unless I'm physically holding a microphone to my mouth. I find it really difficult to physically put myself in the position of singing some of these songs without physically having a microphone in my hand. It's so weird.
Do you feel like that's just like a comfort blanket in a way?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I don't know when it developed. I mean, I never used to have that problem, but it was, I mean, I've always suffered with a lot of self-doubt, and I've always doubted my own ability, and I've spent years worrying and stressing about my ability to do what I do to the detriment of my own mental health quite a lot. But I think at some point that connection was just forged. And I mean, I slowly kind of, I'm kind of started because I want to train myself out of it, because I remember having so much fun singing years and years and years ago, before maybe in the early days of the band and before the band even, that I kind of at some point, you know, getting ready for these shows now, these Slam Dunk shows, I want to kind of discover that kind of person again. It's been getting there. And in the basement, I was looking for things. I was trying to sing and I was getting really paranoid, really stressed, thinking, I can't do this. I can't do this. So I ended up like trying to find substitutes for a microphone to get myself in the mood. So I got like a torch. I was using a torch. I literally practiced every day using a torch to sing to.
Wow.
Practically every couple of days for a couple of hours for months, for at least 3 or 4 months. To get myself up to speed, to reconnect with the physicality of it, because it's such a physical thing singing that I completely forgot what it is I was supposed to be doing. I was like, I mean, it's pretty much everything. It took me, and I had to force myself. I mean, the first time I was in that basement and I tried to sing some of the songs, I scared myself because I was like, oh shit. I've got to really, because, you know, at that point it was about 3.5 years, and I hadn't sung a note. I literally had not sung.
Anyone happy birthday? Nothing.
No, nothing. I mean,
refused. I will not sing happy birthday. Merry Christmas. Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I was in a situation when singing was actually something that I would have accidentally have had to do. And because my attention always drifts between different things, it never really was a focus for me to deal with. So, I avoided it for so long, but it was very terrifying getting back into it. And, but it was worth it in the end. I mean, stepping back on stage for those shows was, freeing experience. I mean, I did enjoy it. I mean, it was, you know, I think it's like, for me, I equate the feeling to when you, you know, when you're a kid and you're on holidays and you, the school term is about to start up again, you get that anxiety of having to go back to school again. And it's always worse, the buildup in your head, than where you actually go there the next, you know, the next day and everything's fine. You work through it, it's fine. So yeah, getting on stage and actually the show going ahead was just like that release, you know, that kind of feeling where I didn't have to stress. And I was just like, everybody was going through the same thing. And we were all there united for Stu and his family. And yeah, it was good. So, I mean, I've been trying to kind of keep on top of myself since then, really, because it was a nice feeling to have. And I did enjoy it. And I can't say it's been easy to kind of get myself to pick up a guitar or thing or sing along and stuff, but you know, bits and pieces. It's been a little bit better.
Nice. Well, yeah, it's nice to see that you managed to rehearse some practice for it, and then Mev's just came out bold and went fucking mental straight away. So.
Oh, I mean, he was so nervous. I mean, he came up to me and said, "I don't know if I can do it like I did." I said, "Well, just do something." I mean, I'm just happy. I said, "I'm just happy that you're gonna be on stage." I mean, that moment where it's literally the five of us on stage. It was, you know, six of us with Mevs, Andy, Chris, Darren, Johnny. I never thought I'd ever get to experience that again. I didn't know what to expect because we didn't really practice it. I mean, we practiced it loosely in rehearsals with Andy and Johnny and stuff, but Mevs wasn't around up until the actual show.
That was the first time I've ever seen Johnny Phillips nervous.
Well, yeah.
Oh man, it's yeah. Do you know what? I think we were all kind of excited. I mean, it was an excited nervous. I mean, he was definitely looked like he'd lost a couple of pints of blood.
I'm just glad that was the first time I've actually met him properly, because I think any other time he would have just abused me in some other way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you
would have had the first reaction everybody would have had with Johnny Phillips, when he would have been so rude to you, right? That you were like, "I am making this my life mission to destroy that man." that's the exact meeting I had with him. And then now he's one of my best friends. So
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, you were lucky, Morg.
Yeah,
you were lucky.
Yeah,
you caught him in a shit in himself style mode.
Could have got away with anything. Asked him for anything, he would have given it to
him. I should have. No, but it definitely, it feels like there was such a energy and a buzz
magic,
of those
man,
shows.
Magic.
Yeah, and it's continued on with the fans every time you've announced a show or a tour or anything since. I'm sure Slam Dunk will be feel like that again. But it's got to be weird for you as well, because this must be the first time you've ever done Funeral or a band, really, where there's somewhat no pressure, there's no kind of behind the scenes ego, there's no drama, there's no kind of voices from labels or management in your ear saying you've got to do certain things. You could kind of just enjoy the experience in a way you haven't before, I imagine.
I think that's kind of what it is. I mean, I think the reason why it is, I think, easier to do it is because there is no outside pressure. You know, we're not making an album, we're not writing music, we're just kind of revisiting our history, really, and reconnecting with it in a way that we've never really been able to do, which is pretty unique. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much what all kind of, you know, nostalgia bands kind of end up doing to a certain degree. I always said that, you know, I wouldn't really want to kind of do anything like this without good reason. And I feel very fortunate enough that we were able to do it under circumstances that gave us a very good reason to kind of step back up and be in the same room with each other and do it without any kind of stress. I mean, it's a very lucky situation for us to be in. And I mean, the songs, I mean, I love the songs, especially the era that we're focused on because of the lineup. It's a very unique thing. I mean, to kind of get to stand on stage with those guys again and do those songs. Because I mean, the amount of love people have for them is I mean, I like to think is a testament to the strength of us as a group, as songwriters, of what we've been able to achieve together. And I feel very, very lucky to have been a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I do have to ask, because I think for a lot of fans looking from the outside in, there seems to be a lot of question marks going, well, what's going to happen eventually with Funeral? At the moment, is it just kind of seeing where it goes? I mean, you're obviously not planning to write or do a record or be a full-time band like that again, but is it just kind of see what offers present itself, see what opportunities come up, and do talk about it?
Maybe. I mean, I think people have been approaching, I mean, Ryan's kind of like the point person for anything to do with the band. And, you know, he gets the odd kind of offer in and he'll just, you know, let us know that there's this, there's that and the other thing. But there's no kind of pressure to commit. I mean, everybody's got families, there's kids, and like literally there's buckets of kids. What it feels like. To me, there are like, you know, there's Sprogs popping up everywhere. And I think it would be futile to try to shape the band into something as an ongoing concern. I think what makes it so unique at the moment and so nice for us is it is something that we can just dust off and pick up and maybe do for a special occasion or, you know, birthdays or christenings.
Our methods, birthday parties.
The world is our oyster. But we've had people. There are definitely, you know, people who still want to see us play live. Fuck knows why, but
don't be so fucking stupid.
Come on,
you say that like you swear to you. No, I'm not letting you carry on, right? You said that then like it was fucking four people you could think of, right?
Four people that I know, but that's my mother, my father.
That's four.
It's
only one more. We need one more.
I'm joking because it's never during the life of the band did I ever think of our band being a band that would be considered influential to others.
Okay.
I don't think any band realistically does that or thinks that.
You were. The moment I heard the Between Order and Model unmixed fucking unmastered copy that somehow Scott Evans got hold of, the moment I heard that, I went, fucking hell, this is unbelievable. I can't believe they live fucking 16 miles away from where I live. This is mad. And yeah, from that moment, like, I know you're not thinking it, even probably like, you got the first album and you're like, oh, this is good, but I don't know. Bro, it was from moment one. Moment one, you guys were fucking killing it. And yeah, loads of people owe you fucking money. If not, just fucking thanks. If not thanks, they owe you money.
It's definitely something over the last couple of years that through touring as well. I mean, I think we've always tried to, I mean, especially through the last couple of years of our band, tried to play with bands and support friends and whose music we genuinely love because we're genuine music fans. I don't think we've ever kind of done anything to, I mean, there were some bands that we took out back in the day, which looking back on it now, I cannot fathom. I mean, we didn't care. I mean, the thing is, at a certain point in our band, we didn't care who we took out. Because it didn't concern, for some reason at that point, it didn't concern us, or we weren't that invested in that aspect. But there was a certain point where we demanded that we wanted to be around people who shared a similar love of the music, of the attitude, of the general enthusiasm of creativity that we so very much felt at the center of and was a huge part of what being a band was for us. So I mean, I never really kind of considered that Funeral would become something that people would latch onto in a way that would be significant, really. But now, I mean, I get messages from people quite a lot, just informing me of how important the band was or is still.
Yeah.
In their life. Good. I mean that we are still an important band for people. And that people are still discovering our music now. It does. I mean, when you're away from it, when you're outside of that storm of that life, it's definitely something that blows your mind more than what it was like before.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a testament to the legacy of the band and how good your records have been over the years, and how kind of they still last to people and resonate to people to this day. I mean, you've only got to bloody mention the band name to people like Charlie Simpson, and he'll come running and say how much of an inspiration there was for you guys. And even people like Ollie Sykes. Am I right in saying that, like, technically, the first time he ever performed on the stage was as a fan jumping on to a Funeral show?
I think that's how the story goes. I think I was unconscious at the time.
Yeah.
Or I passed out anyway. But I'm pretty sure that the story goes is we were playing a show in Sheffield. I wasn't well. I was violently throwing up on stage and then collapsed down some stairs. And then he got up and did Art of American Football with the guys
So 80% of everything Bring Me Have Now should go to you and Funeral in a way.
I agree with that. You're to blame. Wait, you're to blame for that now.
I feel very fortunate that if our band was a stepping stone for people to get into other things for being creative on their own regard, then that blows my mind.
You are too nice. Fucking say, oh, if it wasn't for me, Sheffield.
If Sheffield wouldn't exist.
The town wouldn't exist.
No, I mean, I find it real difficult to think of it in any other way than being I have a lot of respect for a lot of these artists and a lot of bands who've kind of acknowledged us really in a way, and have built or have put their own spin on our kind of what it is we did. We were only influenced by the bands that came before us. I mean, I think that's how music goes really. And the desire is drawn from the inspirations that give us license to want to start writing our own stuff instead of playing cover songs, you know? So,
do you remember a moment where you realized the band was kicking off? Well, like, was there a thing where you were like, oh, we're doing this, or we're playing with someone, or somebody's taken notice you never thought it would notice you guys?
I honestly can't remember. I think there were quite a few points in the history of the band, from my point of view, that probably would answer that question, but I can't give one definitive moment. Probably, I think one of the biggest ones that recently stuck in my mind is Compass Point. I think it was 2003 when we were in the middle of recording Casually Dressed. I think Compass Point was in between the recording sessions for Casually Dressed. And I think it was in like early summer. I can't recall where. Maybe somebody can find out. But
I can find out right now. I know the exact one you're on about, right? Because after we did those shows with you in October 2019, I was lucky enough to do Art of American Football with you guys. And I went,
because I think Nine Inch Nails were playing. I think it was Nine Inch Nails. Maybe my brain is
mixed them all together.
Funeral
for a Friend.
I honestly can't recall. It would have definitely have been because we finished the recording sessions for Casually Dressed just before just the start of August in 2003, because we ended up playing some headline shows around the Four Ways to Scream Your Name EP. It was the first, literally we did the last day of recording in the studio, and there was a day off, and then we were on tour playing like seven shows with The Beautiful Mistake. And I ended up having to go to hospital after the last show in Southampton. My dad had to come and pick me up because I had an abscess on my throat, which had developed through stress and stuff due to the recording process. There was just growing and growing infection in my throat, which was growing and growing and growing. My dad came down to Southampton and picked me up and drove me back to my Stig. And then I ended up getting hospitalized because I had to have it lanced because it was just very, very difficult. Ooh. And I got diagnosed with having the mumps at the same time.
Oh, good Lord.
So I got double whammied by it. And I recall back in the spring that it was definitely that Compass Point Festival, which was just like, we'd been away, we'd been recording, we'd been doing stuff the first half of the album, and we were due to play Compass Point, and we got on stage, and it was nuts. It was nuts. I mean, the headline shows we've been playing at that point were really cool, were a lot of fun. There was definitely a bit build. More people were coming to the shows, especially the hometown shows were always like where it was at, playing TJs or playing club.
Mm.
I mean, nothing could beat those. That show in the Toll House where we played with Waterdown on our first proper, one of our first proper tours was insanity. I mean, I felt like those were the tours where I felt like we were living the dream. I've been going to show upon show upon show in South Wales with every band that we loved coming through to be playing, those shows as well as touring, playing like, five or six shows was insanity. I guess it's the beauty of like being as old as we are now that, you can just kind of look back on it and be like, actually really give some kind of thought to it, because it was just all just spiraled up in a whirlwind for me for so long that I can start picking them apart now. And
regarding that Compass Point, so after we did those shows together in October 2019, I went back to look and watch old footage, and I found a video of Heart of American Football from that Compass Point, and there's a moment in the middle where you go into the crowd and you give the mic to some long-headed freak. And it's this long-headed freak. It had literally been like a 10-year gap. It was like, well, longer now, because it was probably 15-year gap, like between the first, you just see me, my head just appears out of the crowd, and then you hand a mic in, and then 15 years later, we did it and those things, and it's just, it's mind-blowing.
So do you know what I loved very much about those early days is that the people, all the bands and the people, because it wasn't just bands. I mean, obviously coming from my estate, I was relatively the only person apart from Mebs in the early days that came from this part, and everybody else knew each other and whatnot. And I always felt like a little bit like on the outside, but it was always comforting to me whenever we'd play a show that was local and all the faces that I knew would be there. And whenever I get excited and I would be on the, in the pit or crowd surfing or giving the mic to somebody, guaranteed either you or any other boys would be there grabbing that fucking microphone.
No,
and taking it. And it was always gave me so much fun to play shows locally.
As soon as I heard that first EP, I was like, right, I have to see these as much as possible. So I believe I didn't go to your first ever show, but I think I went to the next five in a row. And one of them was when we traveled to, I think we went to Hereford or somewhere like that, in a van. Who else was playing? I just remember it was around the time Goldmember must have came out, because me and you were just doing Goldmember impressions constantly, just saying "Toit as a tiger" all the time.
Toit
like
absolutely
a tiger.
Absolutely, toit like a tiger. Yes, it's your pancakes. Yes, crazy pancakes. Dutch pancakes. Yeah.
Schmuck and a pancake.
Schmuck and a pancake. Yeah. A bong and a bong.
Fucking hell.
Mate.
They were unbelievable times.
I know, mate. They were like, absolute. They were the golden days. They were the golden days.
Well, while we're taking a trip down memory lane, you mentioned that the kind of era of Funeral that you guys are all revisiting now is kind of the early days and the first three records. And I believe you've been talking to Warner quite a lot now because they want to reissue those three records on vinyl, right?
Yes, very much so, yeah. I mean, this is something that has been kind of boiling up for a few years. A good friend of mine who runs a record label in on the mainland called End Hits Records, he put out some of the last Funeral stuff in Europe. We were always talking about possibilities of licensing the stuff to release because we couldn't quite fathom, given the resurgence in vinyl, why our stuff hadn't been given a new lease of life on the format. I mean, I spent a couple of years during the last couple of years of the band and a little bit after working in a vinyl, you know, record store down in Newport. And I was desperate to see the albums on the format again because I was being constantly told that they were impossible to get. They were ridiculously expensive. I think Ryan was speaking to somebody at Warner's and he put me in touch with them. And we kind of managed to work out getting the live at the Shepherd's Bush Empire, kind of like the final hours at Hammersmith or the Hammersmith Empire. Released on vinyl for the very, very first time. And from there, then came the discussion about the three Warner albums. And I was very adamant. I kind of want them to be treated as in the best possible way, which is why, you know, this comes out, will be on the cusp of when they will be available for pre-ordering. I mean, Tales never got a crack at being released on vinyl, which always rubbed me the wrong way a little bit because I always found the thought that record would sound the best on the format. And it does. I can attest to that now that it does sound the best on the format. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they're giving an opportunity for kids who are new to vinyl, who are enthused by the format, to discover the band or to hear the band's music on such a very interactive format, for better or for worse. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely on the horizon, and there will be a special collector's edition box set coming out. So that will be revealed next week.
Oh, lovely.
Do
you? So I mean, all the, you know, it'll be dropped through all the you know, the usual channels and whatnot. But I'm excited because we've been working on it for a good while, and we've had the involvement of all the members of the band involved in the records at that point. So we've got stories from every single one of us.
Well, some of your memories from those days in particular, though, like signing to Warner and making those records, because that time is just
we never signed to Warner. We got gobbled up by the Warner's machine. We signed to a little independent label called Infectious Records, or Mushroom Infectious Records, that were an indie, who then were gobbled up by a major. And we got then kind of moved along different things. We were with Infectious for Casually Dressed. We were with Atlantic, East West for Hours and Tales. I mean, I recall some of my favorite memories are so radically probably not ones that most people would commonly associate with a life like this. But some of the ones that always stick in my head are things like bullshitting the record company and telling them we had enough songs to make a full-length album and we didn't. And then desperately trying to come up with stuff in rehearsals to fill out and flesh out an album, which is what happened with Casually. And then,
but yeah, look at how mad is that? How mad is that to say those fucking words, right? You didn't have enough songs, and then that album being that album, yeah, and as good as it
it's
is.
It's the reason why we ended up putting some of the EP songs on the record, because, I mean, yes, I mean, we would, if we'd had our way at that point, we would have omitted them completely and would have been all new stuff. But the record label were kind of keen on, you know, including some of the big hitters, the live, especially the live big hitters. And for me and Chris, Juno wasn't completely, we weren't completely satisfied with Juno after Mavs left, because the dynamic changed. I mean, some of the songs were able to carry on as they were because of the, I mean, the dynamic didn't shift so much that we couldn't adapt it without it making too much of an issue. We thought about songs like Juno and how, as we were, it's the perfect example, because we recorded those, that EP, that demo, before we'd even played a live show. So there was no natural movement of the songs to finding their place in a live, you know, like you do in a live environment, when before you even record, sometimes you write songs, you play them and they change, your approach to them can organically shift to fit where it, you know, where they become the song. Juno found its feet, unfortunately, amongst a group of people before I think Chris and I felt it was totally ready in our own departments, and in our own way, in terms of the shape, especially with the vocals of the song, I think, for me. So getting to approach that was kind of cool. And so that kind of earned its spot being on the record. But the other stuff, I remember being in the studio, you got enough songs for Yank? Yeah. 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 And then afterwards, we've got like seven songs if we're lucky. And I remember we were in a rehearsal studio in London for a couple of weeks before we were due to go into the studio, pre-production. And we were just, anything that came to us was fair game. So Rookie of the Year pretty much went down as it was. Bullet Theory came out of us having a very frustrating day in the studio, not coming up with anything. I went in when everybody was taking a break to the live room, grabbed Chris's guitar or Dan's guitar, and then started playing the intro riff to Bullet Theory. Gradually, everybody comes back in. Chris gets really interested in the riff. I think about an hour later, we've got Bullet Theory. Wow. I mean, at that point, I had a couple of books, notebooks of lyrics I'd written from years. So it was just like always something for me to pull, to work with lyrically. It's very vague. It's very kind of like my lyrics at that point, and especially because a lot of them were from, I've written from the age of like 16 to that point, were all kind of like far less direct than later writing, a bit more poetic and I think they're a bit difficult to decipher if you're really trying to get to the meat of what the songs are really about. But there's a little bit of everything: personal, political, social reflections there. And it was always a bone of contention when people would be like, you know, what's that song about? You know, what's Juno about then? And I hated, I still hate kind of explaining away my words. I always used to go the old favorite was like, what does it mean to you then?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it means this to me. I said, well, that's fine, that's cool. Yeah. You know, that's just as valid to me. If that's what you feel, if that's what you feel the song's about, then that is as good as my interpretation of my
unless they get it really, really wrong.
And like, this is about fascist propaganda.
I get a very pro-racism vibe. Well, you've got that all wrong. You couldn't be more wrong.
I mean, if you go that way, I'm like, well, actually, jog on, son.
Yeah.
But I mean, those kind of moments are the ones that have stuck in my head. I mean, recording hours is that experience is probably one of the most significant recording experiences that I've ever had in my life, in my time in the band.
Was that with Terry Date?
Yeah, I mean, oof. I could not have found somebody so like-minded and inspirational for me to have worked with, who understood my insecurities. He understood the problems that I had. I mean, he wasn't trying to force me to perform things without me being in a space and a headspace where I was totally committed and comfortable with doing what I was doing. And it was the most liberating experience in recording that I've ever had. And that's nothing against the producers that we've worked with over the years. It just was so unique, and it was so artistically inspiring to be that free to make a record on the terms and to perform on the terms that it was comfortable for me to perform in. I mean, Terry really gave me license to, I think, to find myself. I think that's the reason why that record for me is so special, because it's wrapped up in a whole lot of just, not just creative things, but very personal discovery kind of stuff. It was very much a cathartic record for me to make. So, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, right? Because Funeral, your back catalogue, you've got so many records, and there's loads of kind of hidden tracks and things like that. And I believe you're quite a unique band where every song you have written, you've actually released throughout the years and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering if there's any tracks in particular from any record that you feel maybe didn't get the spotlight it deserved, or you thought maybe would have had more attention than it did. Maybe you wish there's a track you would have released as a single. Is there anything like that that comes to mind, and you think there's an ultimate, like, underrated Funeral track?
I think for me, one of my favorite songs, which we never did justice to live when the actual album came out, was Hospitality from Hours. Purely because I think it really encompasses a lot of what I feel made us such a special band for each other, like made the unity of our creative kind of drive work, because we were able to kind of balance the hard and the soft quite well on that particular song. And I do regret not fighting for that to be played at all. I mean, we only ever played it when we ever did, I think the first time we did an album tour for Hours is when the only time we bested that out. And there was quite a long, long time after the album came out. And it always went down really well. And we were always afraid of these songs for some reason. I don't know if we felt like we couldn't do them justice, or because we felt like they were too sparse or just too difficult to pull off, because I never felt that was the case when we actually approached the songs to do them live for these albums. I think we were a little bit chicken shit about tackling some of the songs off these albums live. We always give, I think a lot of bands do the same, is that you always give the spotlight to the anthems, the ones that, that draw the people in, the ones that people connect with. But I think to make the live experience interesting, not just for the audience, but for yourself, you've got to throw some other curveballs into the mix. You've got to kind of, shake things up. And I kind of regret that we didn't kind of do more of that throughout our life set. I mean, whenever we released an album, I think we would oddly default to playing about 25% of songs off that particular album, and then playing the rest from the other albums. And as if we were just terrified of not having the connection. That was a thing. I mean, I think I did think that was the case, is that some of the guys were like, whenever we played a new song, because the connection wasn't instantly there, that gratification, that energy was an opportunity to yeah. give up. And I felt, I felt there was, we were defeated a little bit by that. It wasn't so bad when you're in your first and second albums, because, you can easily work, those, songs from both of those albums together to make a cohesive set. But I mean, we could have played for, not that I'm a fan of playing for like two hour sets, but I mean, we could have taken a few more risks, I think, in terms of incorporating some of the songs that I personally felt, were cool songs to play. I mean, some of the favorite songs we've ever done, people always ask for, like B-sides, like You Want Romance and things like that, and they're not the majority of the audience that wants those, but I mean, they've connected in a way which is cool. I mean,
don't forget, Yeah, don't forget Merthyr Tydfil's favourite song. You know what?
What's that? The getaway plan, is it? Or
a getaway plan, it is, yeah. Everybody from Merthyr just wants a getaway plan.
Do you know what? I mentioned that to the guys the other day. I said, oh, do you reckon we should play the getaway plan?
And they were like, no. That's from Merthyr. If I was here, I'd have been going, yeah, boys.
It would have been, that song would be a perfect, because that's an idea that I had that Chris worked into a song. It shows its influence on its sleeve a little bit, a bit too much for it to really sit as a funeral song, I think. But I said before, I often had the idea the last couple of, the last year or two, thinking maybe we could re-record that. And kind of
Sean's face right now.
And just kind of make it a funeral song, so to speak. And I mean, when I'm not trying to sound like somebody else when I'm singing, or I'm actually sounding like me when I'm singing. Because you listen to some of the. We changed some songs because. Do you remember a song? We got a song called "Waking Up" on Can She Dress that was called "Summer's Dead and Buried." Before, and that was there's a demo of it, and my vocal is such a ripoff of me trying to sound like Claudio from Coheed and Cambria, because I don't know why, it was just probably something I was listening to a lot of at the time, and sometimes some of the demos that we did didn't filter that stuff out as well as what other demos did. But when we reworked it into Waking Up, that was when it became me singing. So maybe, I don't know, maybe the getaway plan or you never know when you're going to need a good getaway plan is the actual title of the song. Could maybe, you know, maybe that would be a good enough reason to, I don't know, maybe not, but yeah. I had the thought in my head.
That's all seven of the listeners from Merthyr getting excited and then potentially being dashed at the same time. It's just South Wales. That South Wales scene just loved Getaway Plan as well. It's just mad.
The riff is literally, it was like a blend of Glassjaw and Snapcase. Two bands which are hugely influential on anybody in that, at that time.
But especially sure. South Wales, like, South Wales had like an obsession with Long Island and didn't, it was almost like South Wales became the Long Island of music. Went from going, we fucking love Glassjaw, I love Take a Back Sunday, I love Brand New before all that stuff, obviously. Lifetime.
Yeah.
Although
I do think that's New Jersey more than I think is Long Island. But,
yeah. New Jersey's best answer. Literally in the title.
Lifetime, gods.
But yeah, like all that scene, and then like we all kind of just went, oh, that's cool. And then all of a sudden our scene was fucking...
We've got to start somewhere. I mean, like I said about influences before, about like bands have taken what we've done. I mean, we took stuff from, I mean, Chris was very much a metal, like, guitar player. And, you know, he came from the school of learning stuff like Pantera, God Forbid, you know. But his hardcore loves were bands like Stamping Ground and stuff like that. I mean, which, yeah, I love too. But I also love the more melodic, hardcore punk, you know, style of things. And bands, we kind of would often meet in the middle with bands like, you know, Snapcase and Strife and Grade. We're a huge, huge influence on me when it came to doing stuff with Funeral. I mean, She Drove Me to Daytime Television is practically an homage to the music that they made. You know, those are bands that I still love and listen to dearly.
Yeah. It's mad. It's magic to see how many bands can come out of certain scenes and stuff from certain times. Matt, we won't keep you too much longer anymore.
That's because I've got about 20% battery power left, but
get them before it dies. But I mean, with all that now, obviously we're very excited for Slam Dunk this weekend.
I cannot wait. You are going to have the set of the weekend.
Here's a warning, right? Here's a warning. Yeah. The last Funeral shows, I crowd surfed, and for me, that's something that you would not expect for me to do. So,
do a crap set so Morgan doesn't crowd surf, which means your fans don't get him lying on him. But
I'm kind of glad they were playing as early as we are, because I can I won't be late for my tea. And so I'm a real bitch if I don't get my tea on time, Mike. So it's I'm that old man now. I got great. You get grey hair suddenly. You can't. Your tea time is precious. But yeah. I mean,
I'm gonna start telling people. People are gonna go, "Why a funeral on at this time?" I go, "Oh, Matt demanded that. Mind he said he wasn't playing unless because he got sandwiches ready for him. Have him the right time, but."
Time's tea time? 6 o'clock, because you finished at 5:55, right? So
straight off,
that's sandwiches.
You think I jest in this? This is like, that's the way I am. Done before 6, mate. Not playing otherwise.
Yeah. That's it now.
It's gonna be good.
It's gonna be more than good.
If you see me crowd surfing, I apologize. But with all that now, obviously you got the tour coming up in January. You're always busy working with Avocado as well. But is there anything else we can maybe look out for? Is there anything with Avocado coming up?
The records as well.
The vinyl reissues, the first three albums coming out. Pre-orders will be coming very, 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 very soon. Literally week after Slam Dunk, and they will be out before the end of the year. We've got the rescheduled headline tour at the start of next year. With everything Avocado, I mean, we're just kind of trying to balance a lot of things with this pandemic. I feel very fortunate that I'm going to be playing on the same stage as three other bands that I work with.
Nice.
So I get to kind of
call it
double duty. Come back, kid.
Never you know. Carry on.
Malevolence.
Good. Male violence. Nice. Malevolence. Male violence. Yeah.
I'm blood use. So
Nice.
So I'm very much looking forward to catching this.
Awesome,
I love Malevolence. I mean, Come Back Kid one of my favorite hardcore bands for years and years and years. And I mean, it's really cool to be able to get to work with, at least in the capacity that I get to work with these bands, because it's just exciting to work with musicians who feel as strongly and as passionately about what they do.
Can you just briefly, explain what it is that you do with
what I do? I mean, I am responsible for hyping our artists and our tours across all the digital platforms that we work on. So I'm I'm not personally social media savvy, but I am business social media savvy. So I get the information there. I kind of work with promoters and gaining kind of access for materials and stuff and things like that. Just a little bit of everything. I support the agents as well on those platforms. And I get to kind of listen to a lot of new stuff and new kind of artists that we work with coming through. So it's very cool.
Awesome.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah,
thank you
for that.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time, man. This has been a great chat. I know a lot of people have wanted you on for a while, so I'm glad they finally got
literally since fucking day one of this, right?
Me so long, man. I was like, this is the thing. I mean, I was so like, nah, I don't do this. I don't want to be. I did one like podcast years ago, and that was like one enough for me. But I don't know. I mean, I've seen what you guys have been doing, and I've been very, very much into it, I love both of your personalities and stuff, especially you, Sean. I mean, I've always, I've never been very at the forefront of giving credit where credit's due, but I've always had a lot of respect for how you carry yourself on stage.
Thank you.
And the general attitude you have, and I've always. Even if I've never said it, I've always enjoyed sharing a stage with you or a tour with you. And
wow.
And outside a funeral, you're always one of the people that whenever we catch up, we're in any situation, it feels like we've never missed a beat. So it's
I agree.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you. No, thank you for the. We're going to swap it from. It's going to be another 20 minutes of us of me just rimming you now. Just rimming. No, thank you for everything. Thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for accepting me when I was just the annoying bastard, the annoying Chopsy bastard without a band. And then I got a band and became the annoying Chopsy bastard with a band. But no, you guys were always lovely to me. And. Yeah, you took us on tours and gave us shows. And literally the first big show the Blackout ever did was supporting Food for a Friend upstairs in Blackout Miners Institute. And I'll never forget it. And yes, thank you very much. You're a fucking superstar. This weekend is going to be absolutely magic. And I cannot wait. And I hope everybody who listens to this, who's in a band, who has been influenced in Food for a Friend at any point, right, stops in front of you and bows down to you, right, like Alice Cooper in Wayne's World, because it's every brand on our bill, especially the British ones, owes you. So you should be demanding it, actually, right? So if you're listening and you're a band who's on Slam Dunk, if you see Matt or any of the Funeral for Friend boys, just don't say anything, just bow and let them walk past. Just get out of the way, but give them a bow. Wow. So they know.
Especially if I'm late for my tea.
Yeah. Oh, and if he's especially there, run out of the way. Just get out of his way. He's on his way back to the dressing room for a sandwich. Oh. But yeah, thank
that's
you, Matt.
Very
thank
kind
you so
of
much.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Thanks.
No one gonna say a nice word about me. What's
Morgan, that is a lovely red microphone.
Hey, what's the word? Hey.
Muff. Muff. Nice muff. Red. Nice red muff, Morgan.
Red is the new black.
So I fucking hate my life. I hate my fucking life.
Oh, let's just end it there then. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you. And we'll see you at Slam Dunk.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on, boys.
Yes, to you, man. Thank you.
Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
You're listening to Sammy Morgan! Yes! Lovely stuff. Lovely, 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 lovely. What a lovely ending that was. I was not expecting any of that. In fact, I was expecting to go, Sean, I've got to be honest with you. I absolutely fucking hate your guts. So it was a lovely, lovely end.
Nice surprise. Nice surprises for everyone on the podcast. And
yes.
I was very impressed with my pun there at the end as well. You know, never know what's going to happen.
As usual. Yeah, as usual. I nearly cringed inside myself for there then. I nearly fucking...
You set me up. What can I say? But no, thank you so much for Matt for taking the time. As we said, he doesn't do a lot of these and we really appreciate him being so open, honest, and fluent with
thank
us.
You.
It's a really great conversation. Everyone knows Funeral are one of our favorite bands and I'm so excited to be seeing them live in the flesh again this weekend at Slam Dunk Festival 2021 in Leeds and Hatfield. If you do see me crowd surfing, I do apologize, but I'm going to be a very happy human being. So it's going to be a very, very nice time.
Yeah. And if you see me crowd surfing and I am naked, no, you didn't see me. And also, don't touch my junk. Or touch my junk completely. Do you know what? Up to you. I'll leave it down to you. Touch my junk or not. But yeah, can't wait for Slam Dunk. Can't wait for Film for a Friend. There's so many good bands playing that hopefully we get to chat to. And I think we're going to have a wonderful time this weekend. So fingers crossed that we're all COVID free.
Yes.
And then party on for you and me.
Fuck it! What are you doing? Writing lyrics now? Are you? What the hell?
I'm rap. Do you know what? Rap.
Rapping.
Hi guys, welcome to Rapping In podcast with Sean Smith and his wonderful quiff and Morgan Richards. And nothing rhymes with Richards. Nice one, Morgan. You're fucking Morgan the organ and his fucking awkward surname.
Sorry. But no, Slam Dunk's going to be very good. We're going to be recording a lot of content, a lot of interviews, a lot of podcasts and whatnot. So keep up to date with everything on that via our social media at SapmanPod on Twitter and Instagram. We're going to be testing regularly. We're going to do everything as safely as we can. But Slam Dunk lineup this year, I'm so happy that this festival can go ahead. It's been moved so many times. We've had problems with, obviously, bands in other countries, trying to come over, lineup changes and whatnot. But for me, it's still an incredible lineup, and I'm so excited to see so many people and bands. And not to be a little tease, right? But there's a secret set.
There's a photo of you, Willie. Oh.
No, yeah, that's not the secret set. There's no. Naked Morgan will not be appearing at Slam Dunk Festival 2021. Confirmed right here.
He's doing Download 2022 though. Anyway, carry on.
There's a secret set, right?
Who is it?
Being told.
Do you know who it is?
Yeah, I've been told by a very reliable source.
You haven't told me?
No, not yet. Who it might be.
Wait a minute. I just need to check something. Right, let me have a look at this graph. It's happening podcast with... well, that looks like my name in capitals as well. Is that my name? Yeah, it is, yeah. Oh, the fuck don't I know? What?
All I'm saying is if the reliable source is true, then you
do not... Blackout?
If you didn't know it was the blackout, right, and it was the blackout...
Well, I don't know who it is now when you fucking somehow do, so it might be the fucking blackout. If it's the blackout and the other boys haven't told me, I'm going to be pissed. And also, I haven't had time to relearn any of the lyrics, so... Shit. Is it the blackout? Just tell me yes or no now.
I don't think it is.
Go on, carry on then.
But I was just saying, you want to be... If you're going to Slam Dunk, go to that secret set. Because you either see a very, very happy Morgan, or you'll have a band you really did not expect to be appearing at a Slam Dunk Festival this weekend. I've probably said too much, to be honest, but keep an eye out for that.
Right. Everyone listen to this, right? Think how much he loves puns. Has he put a pun in here somewhere that's related to this band? I don't know, and I'm only asking you now, because I need you to try and work out who it is to let me know before the festival, because I know what he's like. You won't have him. He's a prick. So... I can't believe you know.
Hey,
it's a blackout.
I'm a journalist. I got my sources. What can I say?
Madness. Anyway, yes. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes, please think about helping the boys, supporting your boys. Supporting, that's right. I've turned into a 14-year-old again. Support the boys at patreon.com/sapnin, where there's loads of behind-the-scenes stuff. You find out the information first, except who's playing Slam Dunk apparently, because I'm in that group and I don't even know. So, but yeah, we've made a fantastic community of absolute legends, and yeah, we need to thank all of those people actually. So yeah, check out the description of this episode. Morgan has written out a whole load of names of people in the Patreon, but we also have to thank the elite members of our Patreon, who are as follows.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Mikey Engler, Janelle Caston, Mitch Perry, Kelly Young, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Liam Connolly, Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfield, Nathan Croshaw, Emma Barber, Natasha Morris, Sammy G, Shani Meyer Boxer Anderson, Tony Michael, Amadina Barno, Kat Besant, A Full Stop, Captain Hannibal, Jenny Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Mike Oxmall, Johnny Phillips, Amy Campion, Tom Owen, Caroline Robson, Caitlin Richards, Kevin Clark, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Lydia Henderson, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Jenny Munster, Kate Stevenson, Lucy Deeds. Happy birthday for today. What day is it? It's Wednesday today, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it today's Wednesday? Yep. Happy birthday to Lucy Diaz, whose birthday it actually is today when we're recording this. This will come out 2 days after, though. Thank you very much, Emily Perry, John and Emma, Kelly Cannon, Livy Cropper, Jason Oredia, Becky Handy, Stuart McNaught, Craig Harris, Adam King of the Goss Parslow, Ollie saw Sean throw Morgan in front of the cops over an award, but it was theirs. Amesbury. What? Ollie saw Sean throw Morgan in front of the cops over an award, but it was theirs.
I think he's alluding to the fact that the Heavy Music Awards, and if we don't win, we'll steal an award. And then if we get caught, you'll say it was all my fault.
Ollie, I think you've mistaken me for someone who cares too much about this award. Number one, we're not going to win it. I'd imagine Craig Reynolds is going to win it. Number two, meh, night out, isn't it? It's a night out from Merthyr Tydfil in London for me, so I'm just happy to be invited. But good effort, all, I think. Thank you very much, Chris Howard, Alice Wood, Josh to the thief who stole my glasses last night. I will find you. I have contacts.
Oh,
Chris.
Oh, that's good. I like
Josh,
that.
Josh, who recently got recognised on a night out in Cardiff for being one of the patrons with the bad jokes. That's good. Thank you very much, Daniel Stevenson, Rhys Bowring, Craig Gervin, Amy Chilvers, Ben Evans, Mark Jones, Connor Lewins, Kerris Andrews, Sammy G. What? Sammy G's on there twice. Kevin Clark, Louis Cook, and Martina McManus. We love all of those guys. You are absolute superstars. And anybody who's part of Patreon, genuinely, the support is incredible. And we appreciate each and every single person in that group for being involved with us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, we do. I know we say it a lot, but honestly, without a Patreon and all those wonderful people, this wouldn't able to exist each and every week like it does. So we appreciate you more than we can ever put into words. Thank you so, so much. And thank you to anyone who's listened to this episode, who regularly checks out the podcasts as well. But if you'd like some extra content and bonuses and to make some extra friends, head over to patreon.com/sapnin. Speaking of things we're getting up to, obviously we've mentioned Slam Dunk, so keep an eye out for us there. If you see us, shout Sapnin, take a photo. If for some reason you want one, give us a wave, whatever. We're recording this the day before the Heavy Music Awards. It'll come out, well, it comes out at midnight when we're still there.
Yeah.
We'll be partying or sad partying when this comes out.
Crying.
Or something. But again, you can, I'm sure we'll post about whatever happens, so you can keep an eye out for that. And the Heavy Music Awards is being streamed on Twitch, and I'm sure there is a replay, so you can go back and watch it. So if we have won, or we've lost, or the camera caught us swearing in disbelief at something, go and check that out. And you've got a few gigs coming up yourself, Sean, with your band Raiders.
Yes, we have been announced that we are supporting the Mighty Death Blooms from Liverpool, who are metal meets new metal, the greatest of all metals, new metal. And we are playing with them at the Exchange in Bristol on September the 21st or 23rd. 21st, I think it is. If you go to @RaidersBandUK on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, the information will be up there. Please give us a follow. Check out our songs, Raiders UK on Spotify, Apple Music or wherever you stream music. We got 4 songs out. I think they're all right. Sadly, for anybody who comes to see us live, the 4 of us will be playing everything live. There is no backing track. There is no miming. If we go wrong in a song, we can stop and start the song again or carry on from where we need to go. We don't have to stop a whole set and press play on the computer again.
That's a very unique technique now in 2021, and I admire that.
It's
very
unbelievable.
Very punk
it's absolutely
rock.
Unbelievable. I feel like a 90-year-old man in this scene now. Yeah. But with the kids today and their computers playing all their songs for them, it's mental.
But that show with Death Blooms is going to be very, very good. They've just released a track with Wargasm as well, two awesome bands collaborating, so go and check that out and head down to the show if you're in the UK or near Bristol in September.
If you're near the UK
or in Bristol.
Near the, just passing. Yeah, if you're just flying past Bristol, jump out the plane, man. Jump out the plane.
Parachute
laugh,
land just outside the venue near the box office, and just, that'd be the coolest landing ever. Imagine that. And just be like, hey, one ticket,
hey,
please.
Listen. If you're thinking of parachuting into our gig in Bristol in September, let me know and I'll put your name on the guest list and let me know what time you're touching down and I will film outside the gig you landing and walking into the box office to get a ticket. So please do.
Is that the weirdest like offer for a gig ticket anyone's ever done?
Yeah. Are you so desperate for a £6 or £7 ticket that you will rent a plane and learn to parachute, do enough hours of parachuting to land in front of the venue just so you can have a free ticket? Hey, if that sounds like something you do, number one, let's do it. Number two, grow up. let's go. Anyway, hopefully we've won an award. We definitely haven't, but cool. thank you for voting for us. Thank you for letting us go. Thank you to Evie Music Awards for having us. I'm sorry that Morgan took a shit on the table and threw it at Craig Reynolds. But that's, I can't control Morgan. So please, I don't want to be banned from next year's awards, but definitely have a think about banning Morgan after what he does. Also, if you're a slam dunk, come and see us. As Morgan said, yell Sapnin. If you're not, just yell Sapnin into the air anyway, and I'm sure we'll hear it and we'll yell Sapnin back. Thank you again to Matthew Davis Cray, Funeral for a Friend, and Beelzebub.
Weird ending.
Very. Hey. Story of my life. Sean, that's a weird end. Look at this. Weird, isn't it? Anyway. Sapnin! My cock, I was talking about the weird end.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.